Hello again. Welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich. Today, I open up subspace communications and go ship to ship, or more to the point, podcast to podcast, with one of my favorite podcasts about one of my favorite subjects, Star Trek. I know I'm not alone. I love something called Mission Log, a Roddenberry Entertainment podcast, and its sole purpose, exploring the Star Trek universe one episode at a time. That's right, the podcast covers six different television series, 30 combined seasons of TV, not to mention the movies or even the animated series, all things Star Trek. Let me tell you who we're going to be talking with today. John Champion, co-producer and co-host of the long-running DVD Geeks podcast. He's also produced the geeky web series Biff Bam Pow Wow, numerous corporate and commercial videos, and a number of DVD special features. He's also a lifelong fan and enthusiast of science fiction, and he's had a long relationship with Star Trek. Ken Ray is an accomplished online host and podcast editor, and over the last several years, he's voiced the Apple-related podcast Mac OS Ken. Ken started in radio in the mid-90s in my fair city of Boston, and he began covering tech news in 1998. He is so insightful and so much fun to listen to. Now, before I talk to the boys, for those of you unaware, their podcast follows a pretty cool format. There's the episode recap, and the guys alternate week to week telling the story of each episode. And here's a taste.
Now, meet the Metrons. They ID the humans and aliens, called the Gorn, it turns out, as violent races bent on each other's destruction. This the Metrons cannot allow, but tell you what, we've set up a planet where you, Captain Kirk, and the captain of the Gorn ship can fight to the death. Whoever wins gets to return to their ship and go on their merry way. Whoever loses dies, and their ship will also be destroyed. P.S. There will be stuff on the planet to build weapons sufficient to kill the other guy. And with that, Kirk is on a rocky terrain, face-to-face with the human-sized, lizard-like Gorn.
And there's that constant stream of well-researched Trek trivia.
I want to talk a little bit about Spock's brain, but I think particularly what we need to talk about is this chasm we have leapt now between season two and season three, the hiatus, and then what we kind of where we are with production going into season three. So, hello, season three. You are looking a little different, you know, but things change.
Well, but I mean, what's the deal?
Well, people change, hairstyles change, interest rates fluctuate. I'm sure that this will go well.
Hairstyles are not supposed to change, though. I had three questions that I wrote down in the first, I don't know, I guess maybe 2 minutes of this episode. Now, one, I will be honest, I brought with me to season three.
Yeah.
But the three questions I had written down are, you know, what's with the blue credits?
Mm-hmm.
What's with Scotty's hair?
Yeah.
And what's with the pointier insignias?
And, of course, there is animated discussion about the true meanings and morals and messages of Star Trek. At times, our two hosts disagree, which makes it all the more fun.
For a human or for humanity to be complete, we have to embrace that thing which may also be negative. And we have to be able to control it and use it wisely.
And I go back to what I said a couple of episodes ago. I can't remember which one it was or which one we were talking about. It's easy for the guy at the top to say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy for you and me being people living in the States. And neither of us are rich. I assume you're not rich. I don't know. I've never asked you. But I mean,
good assumption.
Okay, thank you. Neither of us are rich. You know, and even being rich doesn't necessarily mean that you've got, you know, everything that you want or need. But we're in a better position than a whole lot of people on the planet. It's very easy for us to say, no, I'd rather think, I'd rather explore, I'd rather do, you know. I mean, I think if there is a message to this episode, it's skewed and it's wrong. But the problem is it's just so ingrained in us, the idea that we can't really be happy. So there must be something wrong.
Well,
seems to be the ultimate takeaway from this. If you find true happiness, you're on drugs. Or if you find true happiness, then you're following some leader that you shouldn't be following. What you really need to be doing is working towards happiness. And if you achieve it, you're a sucker. You can't really achieve it. You got to keep working for it.
And the Mission Log podcast wouldn't be complete without the insightful, onboard, and sexy computer who sounds like this.
Biff's tale is a good one for me to hear this week. I was on the verge of saying that if you really like me and really want to help me out, you could send an email to missionlog@roddenberry.com and say something nice about the computer. Like how there should be more of her on the show and how she could use a male counterpart.
I don't know where to start with these two gentlemen except to say I love your work, both of you, and you make a terrific team. So let me ask the origin question, the origin of the story. How did this whole project, Mission Log, get started? John, I'll start with you. Where does the idea come from?
We really owe it all to Rod Roddenberry. It's his idea, it's his concept, and it's really his mission. No pun intended there. Rod had done a documentary years ago called Trek Nation, which is great and everybody should see it. And it's a sort of warts and all look at his father. He was trying to figure out who Gene Roddenberry was because Gene died when Rod was 17 years old. And like a lot of young people, teenagers, and he didn't have the best relationship with his parents, and Gene worked a lot. So he needed to kind of retroactively go back and figure out who he was. So he did that. Trek Nation came out, and right around that time, he sort of decided he needed to put the other piece of the puzzle together, which was to say, well, now I've done the research on who my father is, but for all the people who throughout Rod's life had come up to him and said, your father's work changed my life, Star Trek changed my life, he wanted to understand why that was. And he figured the best way to do it was through a podcast. We can be episodic. We can go a little deep. And he didn't want to do that himself. It's a huge time commitment. Ken and I know that we'll be at it for about 15 years to get through the entire canon of Star Trek and beyond, honestly, because they keep cranking out new Star Trek. But Rod was really the one who came up with the idea. He knew both of us separately and said, go make a show. Let's craft this where we can talk about the messages within Star Trek and see what that actually means. So when people say Star Trek changed my life, what are they actually saying?
Well, it changed your lives because this is something you guys are doing year after year. And it's really very, very habit forming for us listeners. Ken, you didn't know John prior to this, or had you guys been in the same galaxy from time to time?
No, didn't know John at all. So my part of it is I do a daily podcast about Apple News and news related to Apple News that I found out, I don't know, I guess in 2007, 2008, just through a couple of emails that Rod was a fan of. And we kept sort of thinking, maybe I'll be here, maybe you'll be there. And we didn't bump into each other until, I want to say maybe Macworld in 2010. Mm-hmm. We had talked a little bit before that, but Macworld in 2010, we just hung out and you know, got to know each other a bit. And then in 2011, he and I went to lunch and had this big theoretical discussion that was, you know, Rod sitting there saying, so theoretically, if somebody wanted to do a podcast, and you know, of course, immediately I was interested, but I would reply, so hypothetically, if you had a host who, you know, back and forth like that for about 30 minutes, and finally, I said, all right, can we just stop with the whole theoretical, hypothetical, whatever? I know we have to decide, but I'm in if you're asking.
Let me ask a follow-up to that, because the structure of it is really cool. You guys have a format. You have a radio background, Ken, I can tell, and John is a producer. So there is a format that we fans and listeners expect. But technically, you're not together in the same studio very often, if ever, right?
Right. I think we've recorded.
We're on opposite ends of the country for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. I was in Western New York, and John, of course, was in Los Angeles. No. I think we've recorded 5 times together in Las Vegas, and maybe we've been in the same room recording maybe 3 more times total. And I don't think ever an episode of Mission Log. Honestly, it's always been extra stuff or supplementals, things like that.
Well, it makes the heart grow fonder when you're that far apart. It's a great show. And let's talk about how much research you guys do. And I know you mentioned the fact that for every episode, and let's say a 48 to 50 minute episode, it's several viewings. John, how does it work?
Well, you can get away. Let me back up a second. It varies from episode to episode. There are some that really grab you and you feel like you got a handle on it right away. And there are others that really need repeat viewings, maybe because the messages are muddled, maybe because the storytelling isn't fantastic, but there's still an idea there that needs to be mined. I mean, I would say at minimum, you need to watch an episode 3 times before going into it. And that's just for the guy whose job that week is not to write the recap. for the guy whose job is to write the recap that week, Ken and I alternate because that takes time. You're easily getting into an episode five times just because there's a lot of start and stop, and it's crafting the show scene by scene. You know, Ken and I have never actually talked about how we actually write the recap. I tend to be a little all over the map where I'm taking my sort of observational notes at the same time sometimes that I'm actually writing the recap. So I kind of jump back and forth in those sections of the show. And then after I've written the recap, I realize, okay, well, I need to go back in and move some of these ideas to observations and maybe shift some scenes around just for the sake of keeping the show on schedule. TV shows, as you know, they sort of jump all over the place. So in order to make it make sense, we'll take an A plot and a B plot and condense a lot of those moments down just so they make sense in a recap. But yeah, between that and then doing trivia research, sometimes takes a very long time. Sometimes doesn't take that much time at all. It just sort of depends on what the resources I use actually have. So there's a couple of go-to books. Like right now we're in Deep Space Nine. So sitting here on my desk is the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion by Terry Erdman. And prior to that, I was using Larry Nemechek's book about Next Gen. So, you know, start there. And of course, internet research, IMDb, and there's a great Star Trek resource called Memory Alpha. But it's really about using those to kind of supplement and confirm what I've found in the books to make sure that all of that lines up. So, you know, it's such a relief when an episode doesn't take that long to pull together. But I know that I've got to carve out many hours a week just to dedicate the time that it probably will take to craft an episode of Mission Log.
And to think I've been doing that, watching them over and over and over again and telling no one except this gentleman opposite the glass who will remain nameless.
Yeah, you should have been recording every conversation.
You guys have got it down to a science. Ken, you're a bit younger than yours truly, as is John. And I was a child in the 60s, so I soaked it in and have been soaking it in the original series ever since. Why? I'll ask both of you, but I'll start with Ken. Why Star Trek? Why is it still 55 years later on the hearts and minds of many of us in geekdom and beyond?
That's a really good question. I mean, I can tell you how I got into it personally. It was something that was always on in the background for me. Like, I was aware of Spock. I was aware of Kirk. I was aware of the Enterprise. And I had gone to the movies as a kid. But I didn't know, you know, every episode backwards and forwards. I had some toys, but I think that was around the time, honestly, right before Star Wars hit. Mm-hmm. So, like, my grandparents bought me the Enterprise bridge set. But I think they only bought it for me because it was a toy that people liked, because nobody in my family was well steeped in Star Trek, I don't think. And then they announced Star Trek The Next Generation. And I was excited because while I knew about Star Trek, I also knew there was something there that I was missing. But when Star Trek The Next Generation came out, nobody knew more about Picard than I did. Nobody knew more about Data than I did. And I'm not saying I knew everything. I'm saying nobody knew anything. So it was this chance to get on board with these characters and not feel like you'd been left out or you'd missed out or there was something that you still didn't know. And I absolutely loved it from the first episode that I saw, which unfortunately was the second episode because you remember it was on in syndication. So I didn't know that it had started until I got to school on Monday. And a couple of my friends were like, hey, did you see Star Trek Next Generation on Saturday? Which I hadn't. But from then on, I would ditch my friends. Like, we would go out every Saturday, except I would ditch my friends at 4:30 because it came on at 5, I think. And I'd go home. I'd make myself dinner. I'd, you know, watch that, make myself dinner. I mean, I was a teenager, so I'd pop something in the microwave, you know, go watch that, and then go back out and catch up with my friends later. As far as why, it's like John said. I mean, Rod would meet people, and John and I still meet people who, you know, say that Star Trek changed their life. And it could be everything from, I didn't know what I wanted to do and I became an aeronautical engineer, to John and I have a friend whose life was literally saved by one single episode of Star Trek. I can't say what it is about that show, but there's something about that show. I mean, personally, I think it's the optimism. I think it's the view of the future that almost nothing else has given or does give us today. Mm-hmm. It could also be the imagination, though, or the bright colors, or, you know, heck, who knows?
John, morals, meanings, messages, you guys include that, and very importantly, in each and every episode, and sometimes it's more than less. But the same question for you. Why do you think of all the pop culture iconic programs of that era, this one has not only succeeded and continued, but has gone well beyond anyone's expectations?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of all of the above for Ken's answer. You know, I have a similar Star Trek story that Star Trek is sort of always on in the background. I was always aware of it. And I was also into everything else that was in the pop culture at the time. You know, I grew up in the 70s, so Star Wars, and then a little bit later, Indiana Jones, and certainly the Bond films, and, you know, all kinds of science fiction and fantasy had my attention. But I think that Star Trek, whether the entry point is the colors and the spaceships and the action adventure stories, even if that's the entry point for somebody, I think very quickly you realize that you can be entertained, but you can also grapple with some ideas. And that has always been a hallmark of Star Trek, sometimes done very well, sometimes maybe not done as well, sometimes bigger challenges than others. But at least that's always the heart of it, is to deal with something that is in the human condition. And it's not to slight Star Wars at all, but, you know, Star Wars is myth-making. Star Wars is told with these big broad strokes about good and evil. Star Trek is the opposite of that. Star Trek is about the character and how the person identifies and reacts to a situation. So I think there's something very relatable about Star Trek there. But I think the story goes beyond that too. And I've tried to grapple with how to phrase it exactly. But I think that part of Star Trek's success and longevity has very specifically to do with its failure, meaning that when the original series went off the air in 1969 and immediately went into syndication, and then you had an animated series, short-run animated series in the early 70s, it really took the fandom to pick up every last scrap of what there was for Star Trek and express their enthusiasm for it by doing things like setting up fan clubs and having conventions. And these are things that, yeah, there were fan clubs for other properties, but they didn't get together, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6,000 right. people at a time to talk to each other about their mutual love for whatever it might be. You know, pick another 60s show, The Monkees or Batman or Man from U.N.C.L.E. You know, these are all big shows and they all have followings. But something about Star Trek being taken away, but the idea is still lingering, sort of forced people to get together and form this community around it. So something that I always like to point out is that if you're a fan from 50 years ago, or if you're a fan starting today, you're sort of adopting this whole community. That's part of the reason that Ken and I love going to conventions so much, and going to the Star Trek Vegas convention in particular, is that you're walking into a room of 5,000 friends.
Exactly.
Right away. Exactly. Right away.
Now, it's interesting because there are many times on Mission Log, and I'm a devoted listener, when you or Ken or both of you will say, uh-oh, here come the emails. So, Ken, respond, please, to the audience. The audience is responsive, and at times you throw away a comment, and they go ballistic. They go all nuts in a good way.
Well, I'm sorry. Can you tell me about the times they go nuts in a good way?
Well, nah, yeah, you're right about that.
sorry.
This side of paradise lingers for the entire run as far as I'm concerned. But please comment on the listeners.
I have a surprisingly thin skin. I guess that might be part of what it comes down to, honestly, because I mentioned my other podcast earlier. It's got close to 700 reviews. Over 600 of them are 5 stars, but I can quote the 1 stars for you. that's a whole other thing for a whole other thing. It ends up being, I can't really comment on it exactly, because I know the people who believe what they believe it passionately. I know that I do as well. And so occasionally we'll have people who will disagree with something that one or the other of us says, and the emails come. And they have been everything from I respectfully disagree to people suggesting that I should go find something else to do.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't really comment on it because it's not any one specific thing. There was one time, there was one episode where people disagree with me so vehemently that we actually had a couple of guests on specifically to yell at me, which
yes,
I didn't realize
I
that's
recall.
Why they were coming out at the time.
Yeah, I recall. But it was the spores that got to you, I think, or got to
yeah,
them.
Oh, I'd love the spores to get to me. No, they got to other people is what I say. I mean, at this point, so much of what we do has become a running gag. So when we talk about here come the emails at this point, 9 times out of 10, there aren't emails anymore mm-hmm. because either people, you know, have figured out that I'm going to be who I'm going to be anyway, or that there's no point in emailing me. A lot of people just circumvent me now and write to John and go, boy, this guy, huh?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
John, let's talk a little bit about the guests you've had from the old series on. And it's really an interesting perspective. You have something called the Supplemental Podcast. What's really cool is you can talk to a David Gerrold, and for those who don't know, he wrote the famous Trouble with Tribbles episode, and bring that to the present day whenever it was recorded. What a link to the past. There's a lot of canon and history that you guys are able to incorporate into your podcast, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the lucky thing about doing a show for a company called Roddenberry is that there is a resource there, somewhat, maybe not to the extent that people might expect, but there is a resource there to track down and sometimes have conversations with people who have worked at all levels on these productions. Now, for us, I think talking to a writer or a producer, somebody who's on kind of the creative end of the show, is really satisfying because they're the ones who had to grapple with the ideas to get them out onto the page. Actor interviews are great, but they, you know, part of the job for an actor on a weekly TV series is to forget what they just did so they can move on to the next thing. So sometimes actor interviews, depending on if they did their homework and if they thought reflectively about the shows that they did, sometimes that can be really powerful. I really am proud of the interview that we did with Will Wheaton because he's somebody who had a very unique experience, grew up as a fan, and then got to work on Next Generation, but then went through this sort of difficult time of figuring himself out. But Will really got to do the homework to figure out his relationship to the things that he'd been a part of. So having him on the show was partly talking about the experience of being on Star Trek, but it was also about putting it into that bigger perspective, you know, looking at it from a little bit of distance and understanding. Mm. So, yeah, you know, the supplementals were just sort of an idea to be able to step out of our own format from time to time. And that's been helpful because we need a break and we need to not just purely focus on the granular episode by episode analysis that we do all the time. So the supplementals allow us to break it up. And sometimes it's an interview. Sometimes it's somebody who is intimately involved in a show. Sometimes it's just me and Ken reading email.
Right. You know? Well, and the email's fascinating, and some of the responses from the audience. I've got to credit you guys with something, that it's so easy for one to think about William Shatner and to just belittle the performance and knock his acting. But over the course of the original series podcast, you've pointed out that he's brought it, as the other actors have brought it, reading sometimes difficult lines for anybody to pull off. I've met Shatner on a couple of occasions, interviewed him, as well as all the other cast members from the original series, pretty much. And he is a complex guy, but he's also a guy who has a great sense of humor, and as we all know, he's happy to poke fun at himself. Comment, if you will, about the casting for the original series, and then we'll move on to other stuff. I mean, that really was magical to have D. Kelly and Nimoy and Shatner as the big three.
Shatner, I mean, here's the one thing I'll say, and John, of course, knows a lot more about the trivia than I do. Shatner is surprisingly nuanced. I mean, he's almost a victim of the – not victim, because, I mean, the guy's doing great. But, I mean, if you're going to say he's a victim of anything, he's almost a victim of the caricature that he's done and also – hindsight not really being 2020 as much as sort of, I don't know, hazy maybe. Because we went into Star Trek, I had this idea of Kirk as being brash and love them and leave them and, you know, all of these things that honestly, Jeffrey Hunter might have ended up playing more of a superhero captain in a way. Kirk, there's nuance to Shatner's performance. And even if it wasn't necessarily on the page, there are just little things that he will do that he nails it, but not in the way that you would necessarily think. I was watching Rocky Jones last night, and you could say it's out of nostalgia, or you could say it's, you know, because I'm a glutton for punishment. But I mean, he wasn't playing it like Rocky Jones. He was playing it not quite the tired Kirk that you get out of, you know, Pike, or the tired captain that you sometimes got out of Patrick Stewart. But I'm sorry, Christopher Pike, by the way. Not Christopher. Now I can't remember. Chris Pine, excuse me. Chris Pine plays the tired Kirk, whatever. Right. Anyway, there was something wonderful about the way he brought the captain, I think.
Indeed. And let's talk about Leonard Nimoy for a moment, because Spock, in your discussions early on and beyond, I'm sure, into the movies and well beyond, is really such an interesting character for so many reasons. What have you discovered about the early days and Roddenberry's idea? I know we've seen The Cage, which is the original pilot, and Spock with raised eyebrows, really raised eyebrows, and a loud voice, and then the nuanced performance of Nimoy, which still stands up to scrutiny, is really, really fun. John, talk a little bit about your impressions of Mr. Spock.
Oh, I don't do impressions.
I'm so sorry. That's the other guy.
The amazing thing about that group of actors, so you mentioned Shatner, Nimoy, and D. Kelly, is that they all truly gelled right from the beginning. And that story that Nimoy tells about trying to find the character while shooting the pilot, Jeffrey Hunter, that's why you see Spock do things that we feel are out of character. He's has that big goofy grin on his face when he's playing with the blue flowers on Talos IV. They don't make sense. But when Jeffrey Hunter departs and you have Shatner come in as Kirk, that's what told Nimoy that he could play Spock in a completely different way that would make sense. Because now you have a captain who is more emotional, who's more kind of evocative and enthusiastic. So that allows Spock to be this reserved introverted person who's sort of dealing with his own issues on the inside. And you add D. Kelly to the mix, who then is just constantly reacting to everything. I love watching a scene where McCoy doesn't have any lines, because you just get to see everything going on in D. Kelly's head, or in McCoy's head, played by D. Kelly, just reacting to everything that's happening without saying a word. It's wonderful. But you take a character like Spock, and I was really surprised in our rewatch, because Ken and I both watched all of Star Trek, the original series, before we came to it. But it was an interesting challenge to watch it in order from beginning to end, in as short a time as we did and as deeply as we did, because all the groundwork is laid so early on for the complexity in the Spock character. So what's cool then is that you follow that character for 20 plus years in the Star Trek canon, and it just sort of seems inevitable. Well, of course we're going to follow this character. Of course this character is the one who will face the biggest changes over these decades of time, because he's the one who's dealing with the most and is representative of so much for the viewing audience as well.
You know, you mentioned the word hindsight, and Ken, you're technically minded and very interested in technology, as both of you guys are. We've moved past the communicator flip phone into the iPhone, but really, Star Trek, in its infancy, with a lot of writers just writing stuff out, they nailed a lot of technology. Not a lot of beaming going on necessarily these days, but other forms of technology that people still having fun with today.
It's interesting, especially when you go back and watch the original series, the things that they would sort of linger on. Like, I have talked a million times about that shot in The Cage where they lay the communicator down on the table, and they hang on that shot just a little too long, maybe 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But what's amazing is they're showing you so much in that shot. They're showing you, look, there are no wires. Look, he's talking to somebody. He doesn't even know where he is. No, he can't see him. It's on a video phone. But look at this. Look at this thing that's happening. To me, one of the best things they say about technology, though, is in the man trap. In the man trap, Uhura is communications director or communications officer on a starship that is out, you know, orbiting another planet, and she's bored. And that's incredible because everything about I talked about Rocky Jones earlier, and everything about Rocky Jones is we're out in space and there are these moons that are floating through and we have to turn on the visiograph and just like all these like, oh, we must go and view it on the visiograph. And everybody walks over to the screen and turns it on. And Roddenberry had this idea that yes, not only are we going to get to space, we're going to get to space so much that we're going to get tired of going to space. Not like we're not going to do it anymore, but it's going to be our job at that point. It's going to be the interesting stuff that's going to happen is going to be the stuff that happens with the people, right? It's going to be the stuff that happens with the cultures that we find because going from the Earth to the Moon to Mars to beyond is just going to be we call that Tuesday.
Let me do this before we wrap up. You guys are great to share some time with me and the audience that I have. That's this. I've heard you interview Rod Roddenberry. Sounds like a great guy, by the way. And what's really cool is when he'll say on an interview with you guys on one of your supplemental podcasts, you know, I never thought of that. That take on a particular plot that involved a moral, a meaning, or a message. Both my dearest friend and I have studied you guys, and we kind of know you dig deep. And I often wonder if you think the original writers even had that in mind when they wrote something. But you're pulling out these wonderful messages and wonderful ideas, whether we agree with them or not. Ken, if you can just address the fun of doing that, because it seems to me you're digging deeper than most of us. And I've been blown away by some of the revelations as to what's really going on.
Well, I mean, I don't think I would ever say I know this is what they were doing. I'll give you an example. There was it's the Corbomite maneuver, which is our favorite episode of TOS. I don't want to speak for John, but I believe that is certainly the one that is
good
the
because
most...
I've got Tranya for you both at the end of this podcast. But
nice.
Go ahead.
Nice. And we have a Tranya story for you off air if you want it. But, I was drifting off to sleep one the day before, I think, or maybe 2 days before we were going to record the Corbomite maneuver, and I realized it was the five stages of grief. I didn't realize it was the five stages of grief, but I wondered, could this be the five stages of grief? Fear, denial, anger, acceptance, guilt, I believe, or feel it was guilt in there somewhere because it's everywhere, isn't it? I went through and actually looked it up and it felt like there was actually a character that you could assign to each one. And that as you go through, you're sort of seeing it illustrated. And I thought, well, this is absolutely brilliant writing. And I'm not saying it's not brilliant writing, but then it turns out the five stages of grief weren't actually published as an idea for another year after that. So I don't think anybody tried to do that intentionally. I think it was just more, and a lot of it too has to do with what resonates with you. One of my favorite episodes of The Next Generation is Times Squared. Also one of John's least favorite.
Yes,
it didn't resonate with him the same way it did with me. And that to me will always be one of the episodes that I'll go back and watch because to me it just says so incredibly much. Then again, there are episodes that we watch that John's like, I thought this part was absolutely amazing. And I will, you know, respond. And I thought this part was the part where I thought, could I just skip the rest and it would be okay?
Well, John, that's the fun of doing what you guys do. But also you and Ken have a really interesting and exciting relationship on this podcast because there is that give and take in a friendly way. Is there one time, John, though, when you thought, well, maybe more than one time, when you thought Ken was completely off his rocker?
You know what? Not really. And here's why. We have the best time doing this show. And we've always said to each other, you know, the 60 to 90 minutes that we spend just actually recording the show is a blast. Because it's two friends having a conversation. Now, Ken and I, we're kind of close on the same page. We may not be on exactly the same page. Maybe we're facing pages in a book, you know. We know that we sort of want to get to the same place. And our values are similar, but not the same. Our outlook is similar, but not the same. So we realize that, you know, we're starting out from a position that we want to like the show that we're talking about. We want to like Star Trek, and we want to find a message in there that hopefully is something positive, or if it's not, we want to try to put it into context and figure out why that message is there and does it jibe or not jibe with the rest of Star Trek. So even when we disagree on a particular topic or a particular message or a particular moment in a show, we're doing that because we hope that we really kind of land at a similar place, which is to say, you know, this show is worthy, it's got a message that's worthy, and we're privileged to be able to talk about it with each other and with an audience who then will disagree with this vociferously, well, if they feel like it.
That is the fun of listening to you both, and it's been a great discovery. But I'm in the time-space continuum about 4 years behind reality, I think.
Whoa.
So, but I can listen to 5 in a day and catch up in a week. So that's my goal.
Wow.
To
yeah,
catch up
that's
as quickly.
Entirely too much of us.
Yeah. Well, you guys have been great to share a bit with us, and we certainly wish you well in this universe and others. And really, thanks for bringing us the joy. I mean, Ken, you mentioned on one previous podcast, might have been the one about the movie in question, that Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which is on my top list, is your Christmas movie.
Yes, it is.
Want to let you know that it's also mine, along with It's a Wonderful Life. Those two have to be watched, Christmas and beyond. So thank you, gentlemen, and we'll continue to promote you and really wish you all the best.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much for having us.
My thanks to fellow podcasters Ken Ray and John Champion, hosts of Mission Log, the podcast, a Roddenberry Star Trek production. Go to missionlogpodcast.com. And thank you for listening to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich, available on Apple, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, and of course Android. Produced at chartproductions.com. Special thanks to Dan Tebow of Fast Twitch Media. Hey, this is Jordan saying thank you, and on this particular occasion, I want to remind you to live long and prosper. Take care.